Welcome to a psychodelicious conversation on mental health issues and trends from two local mental health professionals in the greater Lansing area. I'm Michael Stratton, LMSW.
And I'm Morgan Bowen, DNP, PMHNP, and we're here to provide you with a deep dive into the human experience of consciousness and beyond. Our aim is to be educational and entertaining, so just kick back and open your ears and your minds.
And I'm Mike Stratton.
And I'm Morgan Bowen.
I'm Dedalian.
Hi, Dedalian.
Dedalian is our producer. And we've been talking about media.
Wow.
And mental health.
Did you guys rehearse that? Was I not ready for that?
We don't rehearse at all. Which makes us so spontaneous and sparkling.
Our whole life is a
rehearsal. Yeah. That's
right. We are talking about media. It was my topic this week. We talked about just kind of a general conversation of media and mental health in our lives in the previous episode. So check it out. It's very interesting. On this episode, we're going to talk about diagnosis and treatment with psychiatric and psychological things related to media and mental health.
Yeah.
Have you, Mike does most of the narrating and you're so good at it. So I think you should just do it from now on, but I'm trying to step up here.
Sorry, I didn't give you much.
That was
back
a breathy, that was a breathy Michael voice. Yeah. Interested what personality we're going to have.
Mike is my nightmare interview. So what did you think about that?
I thought it was good.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. It was nice.
Fine.
No. I had a fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Crittenden. I thought about her this week, and she was very big about using adjectives. And she said, you cannot in my classroom use the word nice. Oh. You have to think of a different word.
Word other than nice.
That's if you bad. Could take out a word in the modern lexicon, the modern use of human language among the young folks, what would it be?
Like.
Yeah, I know.
Like.
Yeah. That rings in your head while you're editing.
You know, is
oh
a good
gosh,
one.
I say both of those.
Everybody
things
does.
All the
you
time.
Know, everybody does. It's
bra. I cannot stand bra anymore. I have a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old niece, and all these bra. I'm like, dude.
I like it just because it cracks me up. So. Yeah.
My grandson, my 7-year-old grandson, calls me bra.
It's the new dude. Yeah. I'm like, dude, don't call me bra.
All right, back to
back to the topic today. So, tell me about your practice and your practice working with folks and discussion about media. Is that a topic that you use, or
people
is that a topic you explore?
Well, people talk about how anxious they are about what's going on right now, and one of the things we'll talk about
almost
is,
always, I would say,
yeah. Yeah, you know, how much time do you spend on media? Mm-hmm. Have you ever really looked at that? What's that like? Do you want to try an experiment and just try to, like, be mindful about it and actually write down how much time am I doom scrolling or how much time am I spending on the news? How much time do you feel like is enough time for you? That kind of thing, you know?
Any trends or associations that you see?
Well, yeah. Depression and anxiety spike. There seems to be an inverse relationship to that. So the more you watch, the more anxious you are, the less.
And there's a perseverative aspect to a lot of depression and certainly anxiety, that rumination, that obsessive thinking about something. And in the modern day and age, and that has been a thing with mental health issues for a long time, I guess forever probably. But in the modern world, there's so much an opportunity to get into a topic that is distressing or triggering for you and just go to town on the internet or and find 1,000 different sources and spend literally all of your day looking at something that is probably not doing much for your mental health.
Well, and one thing that's weird about the algorithms too is they study what you spend time looking at and what you scroll past. And so they know you. They know you better than you know yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, why does this keep showing up? I'm like, well, it's because it's doing something to you that's making you go back to it again and again and again and again.
Well, there's this idea of the dopamine rush. So in any repetitive reward-seeking behavior, dopamine is the chemical that's reinforced in your brain that gives you a positive burst of joy, of a feeling of euphoria. So folks who use substances, that's the underlying brain chemical process that drives the cravings, the desire to go back. And the thought is that that is the same thing that happens in like a TikTok trance where you're just scrolling and you're seeing something and it's funny and you get this jolt of interest and positive feeling. And but then it passes very quickly and you go to the next one and you get the same thing. And so that reinforcement draws you back. And if you watch young people or old, you know, old people or older people, the interest in the phone, you know, just looking at the phone, where's the phone? What, where is my phone at? What's happening with my phone? It's subconscious. It's unconscious. That just association and mental obsession. Do you see that in your family?
Absolutely. Well, two things got triggered for me. One is when I was getting a lot of referrals from high schools and colleges and that kind of thing, especially college, kids would go to college and I'd get a referral like, oh no, he's flunking out. And when he'd come in, he's spending all day in his dorm room on just playing video games, you know, just doing that. Some people were doing it professionally.
Yeah.
They were actually, you know, gaining points of some kind on the behalf of another user and getting paid for it, which was an interesting kind of concept. But a lot of people were flunking. I don't want to say a lot of people, but it was a thing. It was a thing that I saw more than once. Very often accompanied by somebody who had a lot of social anxiety, like didn't have a lot of friends or had 10,000 friends. You know, I have 10,000 friends. They're all online. I don't know any of where they live, you know, that kind of sense. So that is definitely one of the things that if you kind of trend towards being obsessive, have those kind of OCD qualities, it's a real pitfall you can jump into. And these games are so exquisitely designed.
I'm a video gamer and I love them. I grew up in the Nintendo generation, so Super Mario Brothers. I had the original Nintendo that we bought at Service Merchandise and
date yourself twice there.
Yeah, Okemos and the Meridian Mall. But
kids are like, Service Merchandise.
That was the dopamine rush of that day when it would come down the conveyor belt and you're like, oh my gosh, it's coming. Is that it? Is it, you know, you get so excited. But so video games have come a such a long way from analog, you know, 8-bit to expansive worlds where people literally get invested into the world and it becomes their world. They go to conventions, they dress up, they the imagination, how the imagination, how the lived experience melds with this more fantastical, imaginative space. And a lot of people create these kind of in-between realities for themselves.
What was your favorite game?
What was my favorite? I loved Mario. Super Mario Brothers 2 is one of my favorite games of all time. So that was a fun game.
Grand Theft Auto, San Andreas.
This always cracks me up that sociopath. You play that game. Yeah. I know.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like a Grand Theft Auto kind of guy. He's
beating up hookers and stealing cars.
It's the other side. Yeah, it's the other side of it.
Do you beat up the hookers in the game?
No.
Well, there's a whole online rabbit hole of people that do it. So
yeah, I know that. the most fun thing for me was to get to the 5 stars, so everyone in the world is chasing me around, and it's a riot. It's just, you know, just have to run and drive as fast as you can. That's so much fun. Anyway, that was the but you have to do a lot of crimes to get to the 5 stars.
Mike managed
that
to pull it off.
Funny. Yeah. So, what kind of and thinking of, there's no diagnosis of video game addiction is kind of an evolving diagnosis. It's in the DSM repository, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for review. It's in that stage where they're developing it, and likely will become a diagnosis. But
and it's a combination probably of OCD and social anxiety, I would think. For the most part.
And a lot of times my clients, so I have a lot of clients who are video gamers, or they live in a very much online, so this is another term, parasocial world. So parasocial relationships, these are online relationships or maybe gaming relationships where the person gets a social outlet from doing communal gaming and often repeated, you know, groups or people that they may live in totally other countries, maybe completely different generations. They know very little about the person, but they feel that they have a connection with them through their gaming experience. And Discord channels is another big one to for socialization. So these very virtual online relationships that are incredibly meaningful.
What's Discord channel?
Discord is a server. It's an app or a software program that allows for private channels, basically. So, you can have five people in them and everybody can message, and you can message among each other or individually. And there's a chaperone. They call it something else. They call it a moderator who runs the channel. And so it's a kind of the modern version of AOL chat rooms, Michael,
Interesting.
You may remember. So, but there's a million of these. Signal, now people know Signal. It's a private messaging group. So, but the idea of just having these, they're not face to face. They may never meet this person, in real life, but that kind of is secondary. A lot of times they just don't really think that that's super important. So, the creation of these spaces provides an avenue for, I work with a lot of trans folks, so fairly marginalized communities where they're scared to leave their house or don't have the opportunity or feel safe doing that, finding other people who are also in the community and interested in the same thing. So it's a very supportive, valuable thing. But just people living, their lives very much online in a very different way. I think about my trans clients as well, because the current thing, all the social policies and political targeting and cultural targeting of trans folks is pretty, it's intense. I don't think anybody could disagree with that. Mm-hmm. And so there's the digesting of the media, of the news. It can be just suck the person in.
Definitely a target.
Yeah.
Right now. Yeah.
When I meet with somebody, a lot of times they're seeking services because they're anxious and they're depressed, and maybe not chronically. Maybe they've been depressed in their life previously, college, adolescent, whatnot. But now they're depressed again, maybe a second episode, maybe a first episode. In the modern, post-COVID world is on fire. Everything is, very different. And so part of the initial discussion is very frequently, what are you paying attention to? Like what is in your life? What is your day to day messaging? Like, is there a value on these larger cultural topics that are very triggering, or is it on the people around you, your child, your, partner, your close friends, the people who are in your community? Why is it, or is it a thing that we're not necessarily avoiding, but we're kind of not seeing the value in what that could be versus seeing the negative of all the other things that are going on.
Yes.
And in my own life, I've been trying to navigate this. This is why we're talking about it. So give me some sage wisdom, Michael.
Well, the advantage of...
he's just going to be a bad interviewer now.
The advantage of, some of the good uses of social media or of any media, of even digital work. One thing is it can be a distraction from people who are doing a lot of doom scrolling and they want to do screen time.
Tell me about doom scrolling.
Oh, people that are deliberately looking for things that, tell me about how bad is the climate and going down that rabbit hole.
And then reading article after article or news snapshot or
and then
video
of course their analytics
video.
Are adding on to it and yeah. You want to be proven right, algorithm. You're right, yeah, right. Here you go.
Or people that are specifically looking for, I want to see video of children that are hurt or been killed in Gaza,
Goodness.
I've known people that have done that. Yeah, very dark place. And they live with that and they become hopeless. And it's not that it's not there. It's really there. But the more they dwell in that space, the more that kind of darkness starts to really consume them. And that feeling of being helpless also starts to consume them.
What are the value of therapy as well as talking with a mental health professional? I'm sorry to cut you off. But listen,
you
Michael,
wanted me to talk.
But that's such an important point. When somebody is, in a doom scrolling space and they come into the session and they want to tell you about, but all the, the children in Gaza or whatever the topic may be, And we as clinicians try to say, this, I'm not debating you about, you know, all the mm-hmm. terrible things that are happening. They are for mm-hmm. sure happening. I'm not trying to talk you out of that. I'm trying to shift the framework here and talk about your relationship with that, not about the content, but about, you know, yeah. what's happening with you.
Sometimes they can get that and understand it. Yeah.
It's your turn to talk now.
Okay.
Yes.
Dance monkey.
You're supposed to answer yes.
This used to be a thing. Well, sometimes, you know, you can talk about a movie that's meaningful in a way that, like, have you ever seen such and such a movie, which really kind of captures the dynamics of what you're talking about? So that's a way to refer people. You can refer people to a book, but you can also refer people to a film that you're aware of. And there was somebody that came out with, like, a book about therapeutic movies, you know, different things to relate to people. Like, with depression, I mean, what would you recommend people see, for instance? It's like...
Oh my gosh.
I don't know.
I watched a lot of Pixar movies when I was going through my thing.
Oh, that Emotions one?
It was, yeah, stuff like that.
What is that one? It's,
we'll figure that out before
Amy Poehler is in it.
Yeah, but anyway, I watched a lot of Pixar because I figured anything little kid movies type things really going to pick me up most of the time anyway. And it did. It was really helpful. Go ahead. You guys keep talking.
Well, if you look at Amy Poehler, we'll find out Pixar movie.
So are you saying, like, if you are depressed, like a movie?
Inside Out.
It's excellent. So I've got a niece who's a clinician. She bought 75 copies of that film, and she gave a copy to each one of her clients.
Really?
Saying, this is such a great way to understand your brain and understand your emotions and to see how your emotions are really valuable and how you need all of these emotions. These are not things to run away from, but to integrate so that you...
I thought it was great. I watched it with my niece and nephew, 10 and 6. They were younger at the time. But they loved it and really... latched on to the idea of different emotions and different, we're able to name things. And it was really good. I just thought it was a really good exposure to emotional intelligence for children.
It was great.
And for all of us.
I haven't seen the second part yet.
I think they introduced anxiety. I think anxiety comes in.
Did it?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen that one then. No, just the first one.
It's did you see the second one?
I think so.
It's puberty. She goes into puberty.
No, I didn't
and
see
so,
that. I don't want to revisit that.
So they're going all over the place. They're bouncing all over.
Never, ever, ever would I want to go back to middle school.
Oh, all right, back to media.
back to media. Yeah, what media did you have in like, there was very little. When I was in high school, it was very little media.
I read all the time. There was no, I mean, my parents wouldn't even have cable. We got two channels because I lived in the country, Fox 47 and Channel 10.
Same.
I read all the time. Yeah.
So you guys actually have people come into your office and saying, I mean, basically they're just obsessed with what's going on in the news. See, this doesn't comprehend to me. This doesn't.
That won't be the presenting problem. The presenting problem would be
depression.
I'm depressed. I'm anxious. I'm not making any headway. Way in my life. I'm a failure. Mm-hmm. And then as you start to talk about, you know, what their day looks like and what do they do and what do they do for fun and what are they, how are they spending time? As they tell you more of their story, then you start to see like, oh, wow, it sounds like you really do a lot of that. Or people that are, especially kids used to do this. Kids used to come in with their phone, set the phone there and be texting during the session I would say, oh, wow, what would it be like if you
didn't text for a while? Do you get upset? Do you get irritated with that?
No, I don't. Well, for one thing, it doesn't happen anymore. And I take it as information,
It's
like, tell me about the relationship you have with that person you're texting. It seems like that's an important relationship, so it's another way to enter into their world and engage them. Yeah.
Well, what are some things that you recommend for if you feel like somebody, social media or media consumption is contributing to the issue? What would you...
What I said before, you know, in terms of like, why don't you want to try an experiment to track it and see how much time you're actually using it. Mm-hmm. And the next time they come in to say, does that seem excessive to you? Does that seem about right? In an ideal world, how much time would you be spending? Do you want to try an experiment this week of let's let's see if you can limit it to that. Mm-hmm. Or you also said that you wanted to listen to music more than to watch the news. You want to try to do that. What are you going to listen to this week? You know, just a number of things like that. Other activities that you want to do. Finding replacement activities is important.
Posing that question, what is a healthy relationship with media look like to you? You know, we would say that to the client, but what does it look like to you, Mike?
To me?
Yeah.
To keep informed, but mm-hmm. not swallowed up by it. So that to be informed enough that I have an idea of what the headlines are, to have a sense of historical context. I mean, really, Heather Cox Richardson does it for
you're
me.
You're really influenced by it. I am too. I mean, I really like her.
Yeah.
And I found her during the pandemic. All of a sudden, it just seemed that I can't remember who turned me on to her, but I was very grateful.
Probably me.
Well, it could very well could have been you. So, and I appreciate the academic. I've been in college more times than I can count. Love college. Would love to get a PhD, but can't afford it. And so I appreciate her perspective. I value it. I think she's well informed. I think she's well argued. I think she has a perspective, and I appreciate it because it vibes with mine.
Yeah. 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 So and identifying, you know, anything that feels really in particularly toxic. We didn't even get into this, but I've seen a number of people who had porn addictions.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a big thing for a while. Mm-hmm. Not so much anymore. I think it's just porn is so ever present for so many people that they don't see it as
well. It's a huge component of this. I mean, at least in the trajectory of, you know, our as humans relationship with information and access to information, mm-hmm. and, you know, sexual impulse, desire, gratification is such a dopamine rush. I mean, that is a mainline to dopamine. Right. So historically, evolutionarily, that's programmed into us. So it's very easy to fall into, well, I would say for men and women, but, you know, more commonly associated with men.
More often with men. Some women would present with, I feel like my husband's having an affair when he looks at pornography. You know, mm-hmm. they take mm-hmm. it like that. Other women are like, show me what you're watching. I want to watch it with mm-hmm. you. Let's, mm-hmm. you know, let's have fun together. Yeah, it's really different and based on different people's values. And
in my case with TikTok, you know, during the pandemic, like I mentioned in the previous episode, I mean, I was watching hours a day. I couldn't wait. That was like, no.
Nothing's wrong with that. I mean,
well, it can be
whatever gets you through the night.
No. Wow, Michael.
He keeps taking us down the dark path.
I know. Michael is...
My wife says this all the time.
TikTok. Well, TikTok, you know, this idea... I'm really interested in this idea of brain rot. Like these things that really take our brains down. Our digestion or our relationship with really not nourishing information. I mean, whether it be porn. There's, in the gay community, porn addiction is a huge problem. The sexualization, the imagery, I mean, you know, that's a big deal.
There's a huge correlation with young people with the amount of media they're consuming, specifically, you know, digital mm-hmm. media mm-hmm. and depression mm-hmm. and anxiety.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's like, it's not good. It's really not good for young people. So to have limited things that they're able to have access to, I think is probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Going back to the doom scrolling and all that, do you feel like most of the people that come in with a depression and you kind of link it to well, this is part of your issue?
This is part of what's going on.
Do you think, are they generally aware of that?
You know, it's
but they don't do anything about it. They haven't done anything about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a number of things. So it's the amount of media they're consuming. It's being inactive. It's not, you know, one thing I'll recommend to people that come in with depression is to say, you know, I'll talk to them like, how much do you move? Are you working out at all? Would you be open to mm-hmm. taking a walk, mm-hmm. you know, three times a week? Mm-hmm. Go for a 20-minute mm-hmm. walk to just start with. Just try that. Just walk around your block or something. And it's amazing that how many people don't do even that. But when you start to move your body, when you start to focus on other things, you do start to feel better. So depression pulls you into places mm-hmm. that are dark. And that becomes what your brain tends to
people feel compelled. They feel like they don't have a choice. I know this is bad for me, you know, speaking particularly about media, but I can't stop doing it. I'm compelled.
A Psychodelicious conversation is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is no substitute for therapy and should not be treated as such. If you feel a need for real therapy, you should consult your local provider, Google therapy or therapists in your area, check with community mental health or a suicide hotline if you are feeling suicidal.
Mike and Morgan, welcome your questions, feedback, or dilemmas. Feel free to send us an email at apsychodeliciousconversation@gmail.com. That is a psychodelicious, psychodeliciousconversation@gmail.com.
The views expressed on this podcast are solely the opinions of Mike Stratton and Morgan Bowen, and do not reflect the views or opinions of any site broadcasting this podcast. Replication of this podcast without written permission is strictly prohibited.